This is Lake Effect Weekend on WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. We start today with another difficult story from the world of speed skating. You may remember the story we broke a week ago in which skater Bridie Farrell, who's training in Milwaukee in an effort to make the Olympic long track team, came forward with allegations that she was sexually abused by fellow skater Andy Gabel as they trained together in upstate New York and in Michigan in the late 1990s. Gabel, who went on to serve as president of U.S. Speed Skating, admitted to an inappropriate relationship in a statement to the Chicago Tribune several days later. He later stepped down from his position on the board of the International Skating Union. Now U.S. Speed Skating has announced it has retained a law firm to investigate that claim and one by another skater who has come forward with a similar story. Nikki Meyer was a short track speed skater in the early 1990s when she met Andy Gabel at the U.S. Olympic Education Center in Marquette, Michigan. She says she too was abused by Gabel over more than 3 years. The abuse went on even as Meyer made two Olympic teams and earned medals in the 3,000-meter relay. Reached by email on Friday, Gabel again admitted to an inappropriate relationship, but strongly denied that it constituted abuse. He writes, quote, "I want to emphasize there was no incident of any abuse ever. I never forced myself on any individual, and any allegations of that nature are absolutely false. Any relationship I had was consensual. Looking back on it now, I understand that my conduct, nearly 20 years ago and longer, was still inappropriate. I've apologized publicly for that, and I'm sorry for crossing that line. I understand that inappropriateness more than ever now," unquote. Meyer, who was Nikki Ziegelmeyer at the time she competed, decided to step forward with her own story after hearing Bridie Farrell's appearance on this show. Her story will likely disturb some listeners. Speaking from her home in Missouri, Meyer told Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke that Bridie Farrell's story hit home for her.
"I was shocked, needless to say, but not surprised. I felt bad for Bridie, and I had reached out to her after originally hearing the interviews, and just to let her know that she wasn't going through this alone, and there were more of us out there.
There were more of you out there, and so that means, not to put words in your mouth, but you are one of the ones who is going through this with her?
Absolutely.
What do you feel comfortable telling us about what happened between you and Andy Gabel?
I believe I met Andy Gabel probably around the 89 year, but becoming familiar with Andy would have been in 1991 when I moved to Northern Michigan University and resided at the residence hall on campus.
That's the U.S. Olympic Education Center there.
Correct.
Now, when we spoke with Bridie, it was 1997 and 98 that she related her story, and she talked about being a little starstruck about Andy Gabel. This was somewhat earlier in his career. How would you describe what he represented on that team and in that place you were both residing in Marquette?
Well, he represented about the same as he did in Bridie's eyes. He was the senior, most experienced skater on the team. He had already attended the 88 games, multiple world teams. It would be safe to say that there was a lot of us starstruck by Andy. I believe him to be the team leader at the time.
Was he a de facto coach in some way there?
I wouldn't per se coach, but he was a mentor. Kind of took us under his wing and helped with equipment and technique and things like that.
These are the same kinds of things that Bridie talked about in her interview. And so, how did the situation go from there being a 15-year-old skater in you to something happening between you and Andy Gabel?
Earlier that morning, we had practice, and I wasn't real comfortable with my equipment. And, being only 15 years old, I had actually learned how to ice skate at 12. And I was pretty good at sharpening my skates by then, but I was told that I needed a larger bend in my blades. And in order for you to bend your blades the way they used to manipulate them, and I'm not sure how they do it 21 years later, but they would take a mallet and bend the blade in just a certain way to help you kind of veer your way around the corner more. And I was told that I needed a bigger bend in my blades and to go to Andy, and he would be more than happy to help me out.
Do you remember who told you, who said Andy Gable is the guy to go to?
I believe it was Greg Plannert at the time, which he was our coach. And so later that afternoon, I gathered up my skates. I made sure to sharpen them first, gathered them up, and was going to head down to Andy's room and not only ask him to check to see if my sharpening technique was good enough, if they were indeed the way I needed them to be, but if he could check out the bend of my blades and help me get them where they needed to be.
So you brought your skates to Andy Gable, and I gather that skate sharpening is not really what ended up transpiring?
No, absolutely not. I knocked at his door, and you know, I'm standing there holding my skates, one in each hand. He opens the door. I explained to him the situation that I was in and what I was needing help with, and he said, sure, no problem, come on in. So I entered his room, and he took the skates out of my hands and set them on the desk and said, make yourself comfortable. I'll be right back. So I leaned up against the footboard. I mean, these were kind of small rooms, they're little dorm rooms, and I leaned up against the footboard of the bed and just kind of, you know, leaned there for couldn't have been more than a minute. And he, as he came around the corner, the lights came off. And I'm like, what's going on? And he proceeded to push me down over the footboard onto his bed and jumped on top of me. And I was just in shock. I couldn't believe what he was doing. And I was shocked and confused immediately. And I proceeded to try to push him off and said, no, this isn't why I came. And he just kept saying it over and over again. You know this is why you came to my room. You know this is why you came to my room. And that's not why I came to his room. And I was just so in unbelievable shock that I couldn't believe that this was actually happening and that Andy Gable was doing this to me. We struggled for what seemed to be forever. And, you know, I continued to say no, and he continued to not stop. And when the situation was over, I ran to the door, and he got to the door before I could. And his exact words were, this never happened. If you try to tell anybody, they won't believe you. And then he let me go. So immediately, I didn't believe that no one would believe me. I ran across the hall to a female skater's room and knocked at the door, and she let me in, and I was crying and just beside myself. And as I tried to tell what had just happened, I kind of got stopped in my tracks, and they looked at me and said, Nikki, we understand that you may be homesick, but this is no way to get attention. And I couldn't even believe it, because just 10 seconds before then, he said, if you try to tell anybody, they won't believe you. And he was right. They absolutely didn't believe me. And then so I kept trying to interrupt and say, and then they just disregarded everything that I was trying to say. So I went back to my room and laid there on my bed and cried forever, thinking, now what's my next move? What do I do? It's already done. It's already happened to me. Yes, I should have told my parents, but it also would have been a one-way ticket home, and my career would have been over before it ever began.
You loved skating so much you were willing to live with this?
I can't say I loved skating so much I was willing to live with this. I loved the idea. I had worked hard to get to where I was. From the moment I set foot on the ice, it was prior to any competitions, was watching the teammates of the 88 team here in St. Louis skate an international competition, and I was 12. I had just learned how to skate, and they had picked me, since I was from St. Louis, and a few other skaters to be the ones to help hand out the awards at a world competition. And that was a life changer for me, being there in 88, watching this competition and looking at the United States team in their uniforms and how confident and how fantastic they were on the ice and how great they were. I wanted to be one of them. They were like superheroes to me. And so my number one goal was to get myself in the position where I could train with these people. And I finally had made it there.
And you were willing to stay there.
I wasn't gonna let him ruin what I had tried so hard to get to, because the Olympic tryouts were coming up.
And so as you're training, does this relationship continue?
It does. After the first situation that I had with him, I avoided him as much as possible. When you live in the same dorm, you eat in the same cafeteria, you practice at the same practice every day, attend team meetings. You know, workout rooms aren't very big, and you're in there doing your weight workout, and he is in there within a small area also participating. It's hard to avoid somebody like that, but I kept as much distance as I could for as long as I could. Yet he proceeded to pursue me and pursue me and pursue me, and eventually, you know, talking not really openly to me about it, but convincing me that he didn't think he was doing anything wrong that evening, that he liked me and thought that's why I came to his room, and he could have any of these skaters, which were all much older than me, but he liked me. And he continued to try to make me feel special, and would work with me with my equipment, and was always trying to give me technique pointers on the ice and help me out. And as being Andy Gable, you know, as Bridie said, which was funny because when I heard her say it, I thought, oh my gosh, reading her story is like looking at a carbon copy of a chapter in my life. He did the exact same thing with me. Made me feel special. Would take a considerable amount of time to pay attention to me with technique and pointers and watching skating videos and always complimenting me and making me feel good about myself. That, you know, when he was somewhat open with me in regards to what had happened, he almost broke me down to believing that he really didn't think there was anything wrong with it, that it was just kind of a mistake, that was what he really thought I intended on going there for. And I don't know how he ended up breaking me down to starting to believe in him. He's got this charm about him that I'm sure many people can verify, that he can use his charm and his wit to snow the most intelligent adult, let alone a 15, 16-year-old, young, impressionable, completely naive young girl who was looking up to this man as the best male skater in one of the best in the world.
And so as he broke you down, the sexual contact continued?
It did. Eventually, I actually started to like him. And then more contact had occurred, or more instances had occurred, not as the original one did. There was a lot of sexual contact, but not per se sex all the time.
Sure.
And it wasn't, obviously it wasn't open at the time, and it wasn't like weekly with these occurrences, but they did eventually start becoming more and more common, and I eventually started liking him and falling for him more and more, enough to where in my mind back then, I kind of thought he felt the same way, that we had somewhat of a relationship. And he kept explaining to me that I couldn't say anything, that you can't tell, I will get in trouble. Age obviously means nothing to us, but we would be judged on this. Well, we wouldn't have been judged on that. He would have been judged on that. But when you don't want to get him in trouble. And so, I didn't want to get him in trouble.
And so you did not tell anyone?
I did not tell. Well, I did tell people. I would think almost everybody that was on the team was aware of what was happening. I wasn't very discreet about it. I wanted to be open with it. I liked him. I thought it was great that he liked me. I kept it discreet enough to where he wouldn't. It wouldn't be legally a problem for him, but within our little tight-knit skating community of two handfuls of skaters, they knew what was going on behind closed doors with us, especially multiple roommates of mine at different competitions and international competitions. They were aware and had known how old I was. And like I'm saying, this went on from 15 years old to 18 years old.
And in these multiple places, international competitions?
Oh, absolutely. Almost every international competition that we had attended.
The Olympics?
Yes. And actually, both Olympics, both that I had attended. The alcohol played a big role in a lot of this. We all had our drinking moments. I guess when you're training so hard and mentally you go through so much and physically you go through so much that people do have outlets. And drugs were never involved or anything like that, but as an elite athlete, a lot of our outlets were drinking. And, it wasn't just me, hanging out in my room by myself, sneaking a bottle. It was when we got together, there was drinking going on. And, usually drinking leads to vulnerability, and vulnerability to a pedophile is a prime moment to swoop in and make your moves. And so a lot of what had gone on between Andy and I did have drinking involved, not all of it, but some of it. And I actually turned to some of my drinking to kind of, I guess, as a crutch, just to make me feel better, to make it not seem so bad, because I knew what was going on was wrong also. But it was exciting. I was special. I was the special one. So having to keep things like that a secret, I understood, but I didn't want to. So I was kind of conflicted in my own mind.
How did it end? You said this relationship lasted from the time you were 15 to the time you were 18. When and why did it stop?
My last situation with Andy was at the 94 Olympics. After we had won our medal, and I believe after he had won his, and you know, I was 18 by then. I wanted it to be more public than private. I mean, there was absolutely no reason why we couldn't do the things that were occurring in the open and possibly not let what, you know, the judgment of people of what he always said, you have to keep it a secret. You have to keep it a secret because people will judge because I am older than you and he was 11 years older than me. So by the time you're 18, you're thinking, at least I was thinking, that this age should not be a problem anymore. I'm old enough to make my own decisions. He didn't want to have anything to do with that. He wanted to remain keeping it a secret and remain doing the same thing that had been going on for so many years. And I just got tired of, this is all I'm going to get. This is all he's offering me. It's never going to be any better or any different. And that was the last time that I even let him pay attention to me. I tried to maintain as much distance from him after that, because I did care for him. And there was nothing there. Basically it dawned on me that all this time he manipulated me into believing he cared for me, and he really didn't. He just used his opportunity to abuse me for 3 years and had no intentions on pursuing any further than what he was doing to me. And I guess I finally matured, and that wasn't enough.
We talked in our interview with Bridie about how she had evidence that if someone were to say, no, this never happened or it didn't happen like this, she'd be able to refute those claims. Do you feel like if this were a court case, you'd be able to point to something and say, no, this really did happen?
I absolutely do have evidence. It's clear as day. There would be no denying it. I've got my own evidence that I'm extremely confident, which is why I'm speaking, because for so many years I was so afraid that no one would believe me because they hadn't believed me, and I had gotten in trouble numerous times while as a skater. I lived a destructive lifestyle and was a rebel, and you know, had a hard time following a lot of rules, but was reprimanded appropriately for each instance, you know, incident that occurred.
Incidents like what?
Oh, for instance, one time in Milwaukee, I believe I was 17, a teammate of mine and myself had made up a story in regards to having a death in the family and that we had to leave training for a few days to attend a funeral, which was all a lie. Well, we hopped in the car, drove from Milwaukee, Wisconsin to Lake Placid, New York to hang out with some of our friends that were attending a camp in Lake Placid. And unfortunately, someone somewhere saw us there and relayed it back to our coaches in Milwaukee saying, you know, what are these two skaters doing here when you're there in Milwaukee? And kind of blew our cover. So that was, you know, a road trip when you tell somebody you've got a death in the family, and you actually just took a road trip out of, you know, across the country. We even had to go through Canada to get to where we needed to be. So, I mean, we went out of the country and then back into the country.
You know, every time we hear a sad story like the one Bridie told us, you know, there are people that come out and say, you know, this happened to me as well. And then you get the naysayers out there who say, you know, you're telling this story to get attention, or it couldn't possibly have happened like that. You talked about being fearful that people would believe you way back when that happened. Do you worry about whether people will believe you today?
No, absolutely not. I'm not worried about it. And I'm sure there are going to be those same handful of people that have always been Andy's support system. And unfortunately, they are high up individuals And then there's the few that were teammates of ours that will go above and beyond no end to always defend Andy. I'm sure they will continue to do so, but I know that there are so many more people that know my situation, that were there during my situation, that have witnessed my situation and never said anything. I also know that he has pulled people aside that and have threatened them about ever telling anything. I've received, when Bridie's story came out, I had no intentions on saying anything either. I thought, wow, at least he's finally exposed for the man he really is. Now people know. That made me feel better. I had no intentions on any of this, but I did see, when I read further into her article, she said, my biggest regret, and this is why I'm here today telling my story, her biggest regret was she wished she would have told somebody immediately, that it could have made a difference. And if they didn't believe her, tell somebody else and tell somebody else. And so when I got a hold of Bridie that night, I told her she wasn't alone. It also happened to me. Mine was a little bit more extensive than hers. But don't feel bad for not telling anybody immediately, because I did, and they did not believe me. And in fact, not only believed me, they accused me of being homesick and needing attention. And who would ever want that kind of attention? I didn't want it at 15, and I don't want it at 37, but I felt bad the fact that she thought that maybe if she would have told somebody immediately, none of this would have happened to her. I'm not quite sure if that would have been the situation, because of who he is. People don't believe he would do that, and even the ones that do believe it won't admit it because of who he is.
This many years later, is it hard for you to reconcile what would have been one of the most exciting times in your life, going to two Olympic Games, with this dark time as well? Do you have fond memories of skating?
You know, unfortunately, I have some fond memories. I have more not fond memories. I have hidden and ran from my Olympic status since I retired. People will recognize me and ask me and want me to talk about it, and I would assume no one even know that I was involved in it. You know, it should have been some of my most proud moments. It should have been one of those things that I would be proud to talk about. It just seems more of a dark chapter in my life than anything. And the only really fun times that I can think about are some of those rebellious times that I took out on my own to kind of get away from what I was in the middle of.
Have you spoken to law enforcement about this?
Yes, I was contacted by an FBI agent yesterday and had spoke with him for a matter of probably a couple hours at least. I've also received a voicemail from a separate FBI agent that I have not been able to have time to contact yet.
But in your previous conversation, and obviously your conversation with the FBI is between you and him or her, but you talked about the same kind of stuff you've been talking with us about?
Yes, exactly the same type, except for with it being the FBI, they need specific details with every instance and every encounter, and so, which is why it took an extensive amount of time to speak with them. Fortunately for them and for me, even being 21 years later, the memories of the actual situations that I was in and the encounters that I had been in with Andy are embedded into my brain. So I was able to give details and specifics on our encounters. Time frame in between, you know, when we were here and how long it was before we went there was a little more foggy, but those fortunately are probably easy to be able to look up in archives of the sport, but it was just an extensive, in detail conversation that I had had, which was quite a bit harder than it is talking to you today.
How has this last week been for you?
Stressful. Stressful and busy. My normal schedule is stressful and busy, and I have very little free time between work and school and my family, that this, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, has really been overwhelming.
Do you have kids?
I do. I have a 12-year-old little girl.
Have you been able to talk with her at all about any of this yet?
I spoke with her, actually had a very nice conversation with her last night in regards to what I've been going through and what Bridie had gone through. I had such a horrible headache last night, started about noon, and I still have it a little bit, but it got to be so severe of a migraine headache that she made dinner and brought, you know, a pizza, and she brought me down pizza and a water bottle and, you know, turned the TV off and just kind of sat there and talked to me and said, you know, I see, Mom, that there's things going on this week that, you know, you've been really busy and really stressed out, and you're always on your phone and are checking your email and talking to random people. So she was kind of pulling for some information on what was going on. So, you know, I eased into giving her, you know, brief description of what I was doing and why I was talking to people and what had occurred. And she kept, you know, she was persistent on finding out what it was all about. So, you know, as discreet as I could, I explained to her what the situation that was with Bridie and how now I'm directly involved in it, because that same type of situation happened to me when I was her age. And she kind of smiled and looked at me and she said, "You'd mentioned Andy Gable to me before. When I first started liking boys, you said that you hadn't always had good experiences with boys, and that before you ever really start liking somebody, find out who they are and how and what kind of person they are." And she said, "I remember you specifically using Andy Gable's name, and I didn't know why." She said, "But now I do." And I'm like, it's just so funny because she's so naive and so sweet and so cute and likes boys now, and she'll be 13 in May. She's basically 2 years younger than I was when I had to experience my situation with Andy. And to see how naive and sweet and innocent she is, you don't lose that much of it in 2 years. Just to kind of sum up how I was when I was 15. She would never, ever think something like that could happen to her. Neither did I.
Well, Nikki Meyer, I know this must not have been an easy story for you to share, but I thank you so much for your time.
I thank you for having me on. I feel good about talking about it now. It's no less hard for me to talk about, but I know there's a reason why, and I do believe there's a reason why everything happens, and I believe that this is giving me the opportunity to finally get it off my chest. Now I don't have to live with the secrets anymore, and I don't have to feel ashamed for it either happening or keeping it a secret. It's out. It's off my shoulders. I feel more free to answer questions, that there is nothing hidden anymore.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nikki Meyer is a 2-time Olympic medalist in short track speed skating. She spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke about her allegations of sexual abuse by fellow skater Andy Gable in the early 1990s. Through an email, the FBI said it declined to comment at this time about a possible investigation. In an email to WUWM on Friday evening, Gable admitted to an inappropriate relationship but emphatically denied charges of abuse. U.S. Speed Skating, the sport's governing body in this country, announced Friday evening it has retained a Chicago-based law firm to look into Meyer's allegations, as well as those made earlier by Bridie Farrell. You can hear all of our coverage surrounding speed skating at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. We'll take a short break and then return with the Wisconsin stories in the news with analyst Bruce Murphy. Stay tuned for that. This is Lake Effect Weekend on Milwaukee Public Radio.